everybody. It's Wednesday, November 7th. Bad Rock Obama just beat Matt Romney in the election. And you are listening to the Big Planet Comics Political Hour.
Welcome.
Welcome. Right. No, this is episode 64 of our thing that we do, the Big Planet Comics podcast. Indeed. I figured I needed to
clarify,
to bump it up. So, yeah. What I'm going to say that my name's Kevin.
I'm Kojo Anani. I'm Nick.
Nick. I'm Jared.
And this is the Big Planet Comics podcast. As always, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can look at our Facebook page and see all the stuff. You can follow us on Twitter at Big Planet Comics for all your presidential news. And you can check out our Tumblr, which is...
Tumbleweeding away.
It is, yeah.
But it's got stuff.
As we talked about last week, we weren't sure with the storm and everything if our Legends of Zeta, the Space Girl signing was going to happen. But it did not. It got moved. So now it's on November 10th. Ben Hatke.
One week delay coming up.
Yep. 2 days from now. 3 days.
So this Saturday, check it out. All right, cool, you guys. What's going
all
on?
All right.
Yeah, radical. What's
going on with you guys?
I think we all stayed up late doing some politicking. I think that's about it.
Drinking, mostly.
That's politicking.
Taking shots every time something happened.
Oh, really?
Just anytime something happened in the entire world.
Like, hey, another poll closed.
No, I literally heard, NPR was complaining about it, because this one dude was like, I heard someone was doing a drinking game where it's like, every time you hear Obama or, like, poll, you drink. That's suicide. That's not a real drinking game. It was
really
funny.
Yeah, you'd probably pretty much just be drinking the entire time.
Yeah, but NPR, like, yelling about how crappy the rules of a drinking game are. It's really funny.
It's important stuff. NPR's got to cover the important news on the Kojo Nanamdi show.
It's true.
Biff Bang Pow, you guys. So besides watching election returns, I know that's what me and Jared were doing. So we were scrambling to read books today. What about you, Nick, though? What have you been up to?
I was doing that too, but I also became a godfather this weekend.
Yeah.
That was sweet. Baptized my,
you made a baby an offer that it couldn't refuse.
Yeah. It was funny. My dad had the funniest, he said the funniest thing. We were like at the baptism like reception or whatever. And he's like drinking, I don't know, beer or wine or whatever. And he was like kind of tipsy, and he comes over. He's like, "Ha ha, Nick, you're a godfather. Good fellas." I was like, "Exactly."
This is the same dad who wanted to buy a Google computer.
Yeah. He's like, "What can we get those Googles?" He doesn't understand technology.
So, Jared, have you been up to anything else besides?
I went to DC United versus New York Red Bulls first playoff game on Saturday.
Is there a game tonight?
There's a game right now, which is telling you how tuned in I will be to this podcast. I will totally not be checking my Twitter updates all the time.
Is there a monster team?
A monster? No, God, that'd be amazing.
Like a team of monsters?
Yeah, like Mutant Football
them.
League.
Cooler.
Yeah, no, but there is a Red Bully. What
Red Bully.
I don't even know what's going on right now. You
this
guys.
Will be the greatest podcast ever.
Yeah, let's just
I have predicted it.
Let's just do some news. Let's not try to talk to each other anymore.
Okay.
All right, hot off the presses. We got a lot of Justice League related news.
All right, well, come on.
That is hot.
The most exciting thing. Justice League of America, 52 variant covers.
What?
Boo.
Doesn't have nothing to do with the new 52.
Well, but it does.
Like, no, it is. It gets better.
It's one for each state.
Including Puerto Rico
Yeah, it includes... Well, the first thing I read was like, 52 covers for each state. And I was like, wait, what?
Didn't like Metropolis and Gotham City both become states after No Man's Land?
No.
No.
But I'm trying, D.C.
The other two are Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico, which may actually become a state, from what I hear.
No.
They
finally said that they want to be a state.
Yeah.
But no.
I think it could happen. Why not?
Because D.C. wants to be a state, and it's not happening.
If D.C. Comics gets their way,
yeah.
It won't be a state.
So that's a lot of variant covers. Anyway, Jeff Lemire is writing Green Arrow.
That's interesting.
It's pretty exciting. Yeah. I figured they were that's probably great. Like, we have a Green Arrow show and our comic stinks. Let's put a good writer on it.
Well, I think that was their plan before, but then they were like, Ann Senti? And people were like, wait, who? And except people that are like over 40, and they were like, oh, cool, I remember that.
That's somebody.
Yeah.
And also, we got some special news from Jared Smith over here.
Jared's got, news from across the Pacific Ocean.
Across the ponds.
A few ponds.
Yeah. Other side of the rim. So what? Let's see. Late 1940s. Mr. Osamu Tezuka has apparently drawn an 18-page comic, handed it off to a friend of his, who then did nothing with it until this year. It has now reemerged that there's an unpublished, unknown of new Tezuka comic out there, which just got bought up by the Tezuka Productions, kind of their archive division, and they didn't even know about this comic. And hopefully, it will be republished in, I don't know, Japanese or English at some point. But it involves such exciting things as, like, after World War II, there were food shortages and black markets and other cutting-edge political moments.
Like, Tezuka's always so interesting because he'll do stuff like that. And then he's like, hey, here's a story about Astro Boy and hot dogs.
Yep. That'll be amazing.
Yeah. And you said the guy who had it sold it to, like, just a used bookstore, right?
I don't even know if he sold it or just he donated or the bookstore just ended up with it
but
or
then,
something.
But
yeah.
Then the Tezuka place, like, bought it from the used bookstore for, like, $37,000.
Yeah,
$3 million.
3 million yen or something.
Well,
ridiculous.
That bookstore made out like bandits, man.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
like, I probably died in... They just kind of
yeah, might just
threw stuff out
state.
Or something.
Silver lining from Nick over here. yeah, so I mean, I think this is interesting, but then there's so much Tezuka stuff that's not in print in English.
He's
already
done two Beethoven biographies, two. I've never seen him in English.
I know he did some westerns that I'd
oh,
love
really?
To see in English.
Oh,
yeah,
wow, crazy.
And he did a bunch of adaptations of like classic novels and stuff
oh, yeah.
like that too. And I'd
I
like
feel
to
like
see.
He's probably done more. He's got more output than anybody on Earth in any medium, I feel.
I don't know about that, but like,
well,
but comics for sure, yeah.
Yeah.
I think there are probably authors like crappy,
true.
Like Dean Koontz has probably put out more pages than Tezuka.
Like maybe. Daniel Steele. Or,
yeah, yeah,
or,
exactly.
Yeah.
V.C. Andrews or something. But Carolyn Keene. But but I think he's probably done more comics pages than anybody. I mean, he's done more than Jack Kirby, and Jack Kirby has done a lot.
That's
yeah.
true.
Jack Kirby used to draw 37,000 pages a day. Most people don't know that.
Yeah.
So, is that it for the news, Nick? Or you
that's
got some?
It.
That's it for the news. All right.
Breaking.
Well, yeah, the news is breaking. Give my piece of paper back. I can't remember what we do after news. All right, guys, let's do some viewer mail. All right, our first and only viewer mail today is from Nate Carlos, longtime guy. He's been alive for a long time. He says, how's it hanging?
You know.
Wow.
Don't answer that.
Yeah.
In celebration of us not being subjected to political ads anymore, what are some awesome political comics? He says, I mean comics in the vein of West Wing Boss. What is Boss? Is that the one where Gina Davis is president?
Wow.
Hey, you guys are really on the ball tonight. And such, I'm assuming that Brubaker's Prez would be in the list and maybe even Ex Machina. I haven't read either of those, but I kind of really want to. Thanks and keep up the good work, Nate Carlos. Sometimes people ask us questions and then they steal our answers from us.
Yep.
Definitely Ex Machina is always my go-to for
Politico.
Stuff.
Oh, I've got one that I know Kevin at least has seen before. Eagle, The Making of an Asian American President, which came out Japanese manga in 2000. Which was all about an Asian American guy who runs for president of the U.S. in a very prescient move, which was very interesting, and all the like political shenanigans and over the top drama that happened in that campaign, like all these hidden secrets and stuff. But it was great.
This is kind of a weird, goofy one, but actually, a customer of ours put out a little hardcover book called 44 Presidents,
oh, yeah.
And it's just a really funny like illustrations with like kind of fake quotes from presidents, and it's hilarious.
Pretty good.
Also, just more of like a political kind of thriller. There's a book called Homeland Directive,
oh yeah,
and that's a really cool book about kind of it's like an economic thriller, I guess you could call
right,
it, like
right.
with disease stuff. I don't know. It's a cool book. It kind of reminds me of like Contagion or something.
Yeah, right.
God, that movie's so depressing. Contagion.
I still haven't seen it.
Oh,
spoiler.
Spoiler. It's depressing. And then I haven't read Brubaker's Prez. I didn't know Brubaker did a Prez thing.
I didn't know that either. I've read the original Prez.
Yeah, the original Prez is nuts.
Awesome.
It's like that kind of weird era in comics where like all these old dudes who weren't hippies were like trying to write hippie comics.
Yeah.
And they're all awesome.
Yeah, that one's it was like four issues. Is that all that got published?
It was definitely a short series, but it's basically about like a teenager who becomes president of the
United
States.
Yeah, they dropped the voting age to 18 and the requirement to be president. There's no age limit anymore, and an 18-year-old actually gets elected, and it's all like the troubles he has to deal with. But there's also like the main bad guy is like Boss Smiley or something. It's just a dude with a giant smiley face for a head, and the Prez character actually shows up in Sandman, if anyone recognizes that from Sandman. So
And if you want some completely ridiculous politics, you should read Ultimates. Because Captain America is president.
Captain America is president. And also, Lex Luthor was also president at one point.
Yeah,
I think the most important is Emperor Joker as the best political comic.
I don't think Emperor Joker got elected.
No, he didn't.
It says politics. Doesn't mean it's elected. You're not doing Jeffersonian democracy here. It's politics.
Oh. The road to the Purple House. The road to the Fun House. There we
the
go.
The stuff with Captain America and Ultimates is just hilarious. It's like, you got to go to a staff meeting. He's like, no, I'm going to go blow up this jet that's heading towards the White House.
One that's vaguely tied in, I'd say Nightly News, Jonathan Hickman's first one, which deals a lot with the media and how they kind of manipulate things. I think that's a kind of interesting tie-in one.
And then basically, like, why even take a history class, read a book? Just read the Obama Spider-Man issue, because that's where all the real juicy presidential stuff is.
Isn't that why everyone voted for him?
It is, yeah, because
Spider-Man endorsement?
They were all the chameleon.
There's also a book called Barack Hussein Obama, which has nothing to do with Barack Obama.
Well, no, it definitely does, but it looks more regal than it is. No, it's a goofy book.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hopefully that answers your question, Nate. Hopefully our answers to that question don't make people not send in questions. Because I don't know. There's not as much of that as maybe you would think there would
be. Read the new issue of Deadpool.
Well, wait. Oh, yeah, that's true.
Oh, yeah.
We'll talk about that a little bit as well. So, there you go. All right. So,
more recommendations coming up.
If you do have questions, you can always send those to podcast@bigplanetcomics.com, or you can leave a message on our podcast hotline, which is out there somewhere.
It's floating in the ether.
Yeah. That number is 1703-539-CAST. 1703-539-CAST. All right. Well, I don't know what's going on tonight, guys. Yeah. This is a crazy episode.
We're riding the election crash.
We are, yeah. I definitely stayed up until really late to watch Obama give his speech.
Yeah.
And it was moving stuff.
Stayed up to watch Jon Stewart tell me who won, which is what happened, actually.
All right, so let's do comics reviews. That's what we're here to do.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
We love comics, they're swell, except when they're written by Scott Lobdell. I prefer important books like Louis Riel. It's time for reviews.
All right, review pause. I thought of two more. The Art of War, which we reviewed on the podcast, has a lot of political stuff in it. But perhaps one of the best political-themed comics ever is Cerebus, which has huge, huge storylines about religion and politics.
Very true.
There you go. Let's review some stuff.
Let's review some stuff. All right, up first this week, we've got a new comic from Stan Sakai, even though it's written by Mike Richardson.
Yeah.
Who has written other stuff. He wrote The Secret, which is a horror comic that we've mentioned a few times on here before.
So good. So
and then,
creepy.
And then this is drawn by Stan Sakai. And another interesting thing about this is the editorial consultant on this is Kazuo Koike, the guy who wrote Lone Wolf and Cub and Path of the Assassin and
Sanctuary? No, Crying Freeman?
Yeah.
He's
indeed.
So good.
And insane. And then some crazy, I say, and then some crazy
yeah, and
stuff.
Then as the in, crazier things.
Yeah, but he also wrote Wounded Man, which is like
bananas.
It has
white haired demon,
the best water ski sex scene you'll ever read
in comics.
But anyway, 47 Ronin isn't quite as crazy as all that, but it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, so Richardson has a little thing at the back talking about how he got into this and why Koike is actually working with him on it. Like, he's always been a fan of Japanese stuff and like, fell in love with the Chushingura story of the 47 Ronin. I'm not gonna tell you what happens in it because that's what this comic's all about, but basically. The Chushingura story is based on the myth of this, and so it looks like he's trying to go back to not the like censored version, because like when it first came out they used different people's names because it was about real people and a real event that happened where 47 Ronin, their master gets in a lot of trouble and they have to go through a very convoluted plan of vengeance. But this first issue, this is what, four or five issues? How long is this going to be?
It's five issues.
Five-issue series. Oh, yeah. So anyway, so Richardson talked to Koike as just like, hey, I'm going to do this cool story about Japan. And Koike just gave him advice, which I think is pretty awesome.
That's cool. No, that's very cool.
So this opening one is just about Lord Asano, who's a kind of like governor of the feudal Japanese period.
Yeah, if people don't know like what Ronin are, I guess. Like,
yeah, good point.
Like basically after the samurai were like demilitarized during the Edo period in Japan, there were just like all these samurai who were still just like were walking around and they had the rights to carry swords and stuff like that.
Yep.
But they didn't have anything to do
or any income for a lot of them, and yeah, it got really sketchy.
So a lot of them started to work sort of as like heavies for like feudal lords or town protectors or bandits and stuff.
Anything.
There's that other book. What is that book about the Ronin?
Vagabond?
No, there's... Oh, man, I shouldn't ask because...
Ronin by Frank Miller.
Ronin with Robert De Niro. But anyway, I think that the whole idea of Ronin is really interesting.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating concept. But anyway, at this point, basically the lords were kept under control by being sent to Tokyo to basically waste their money. And it was a very corrupt time. And so Lord Asano is one of these guys who gets sent on his mission there. And is kind of refusing to kowtow and, like, just, you know, be the honorable guy, which, of course, just means he gets in trouble with all the corrupt officials. And this first issue is basically how he comes about to ruin his name and his family and get in lots of trouble.
Yeah, and that's pretty much everything that happens. It's a lot more, it ends up being a lot more complicated than that.
Yeah.
But it was really fascinating. Honestly, when I saw the cover to this, which is like blood splattered, a guy with a sword, I was like, all right, here we go. We're going to get some crazy samurai action. But then it ended up being just this kind of, I don't want to say quaint, but like a very kind of small story about, you know, like the petty politics of a Japanese feudal village.
Yeah.
And it was really cool. I think there's probably going to be a lot more action as the series goes on.
I know the story of this. Definitely. There is going to be carnage. Not just action, carnage coming very soon.
One of the interesting things in this, there's a lot of like footnotes, which is kind of cool because they don't really explain anything through the like dialogue. Like stuff that doesn't need to be explained through dialogue, like what a daimyo is and stuff like that. And there's, you know, helpful footnotes on this. And I think this is really good for Stan Sakai. It fits right in with kind of what he's been doing in Usagi for, you know, however long, like
27 years or something.
Yeah. I feel like Usagi basically takes place in like the anthropomorphic version of this same time period. So
And then both that and this are like very interesting looks into Japanese culture of the time.
Yeah, it's very similar to like Akira Kurosawa movies also take place in the same time period. And sort of it's cool. I thought it was a really interesting book, and I'm excited that there's going to be carnage down the way. Although I imagine it's going to be devastating because some of these characters I'm already kind of attached to. So
things do not end up well for a lot of people.
We'll see what terrible things happen to them.
But yeah, I'm very excited. I think this is a great adaptation.
All right, so up next we've got a book called Black Lung. This is a new book from Fantagraphics by Chris Wright, a guy whose art I have never seen before, but. But he impresses right out of the gate, and
I was trying to figure out who this he looked. His art looked like there was someone that reminded like Tom Hart almost.
Yeah, like almost like a cross
with someone
like Tom Hart mixed with like Christoph Blaine or something like that.
Yes, thank you. That's a good.
But
they were both on meth.
Yeah. So Black Lung's a pretty crazy book.
All right. So Black Lung.
Try explaining this, Nick.
Is the tale of a. Kind of a what would you call the main guy? He's a teacher. He's a teacher, but he's kind of like one of the rich people in town.
He's and like I don't know,
intelligentsia.
Yeah, intelligentsia who's kind of fallen on hard times.
Or he at least considers himself one.
Yeah. He wears like one of those white wigs type things, and he is in this town that's kind of mostly really poor, and he's trying to help a student that's in danger, and he ends up in the wrong part of town. And gets wrapped up in this fight between a local crime boss and a pirate, and accidentally gets kidnapped and ends up on a pirate ship.
He gets shanghaied.
Yeah, basically he's like a teacher in Tortuga.
Yeah. Right. And then he ends up on this pirate ship with these crazy pirates who only keep him alive because the captain can't read or write, and he wants somebody to read to him and write down his adventures.
And the key word there is alive. We're not saying treats well, just keeps him alive.
And then, you know, it's just everything that happens in it is like really crazy. Like, for example, right before he's the captain asks him to read and write for him, one of the other crewmen cuts off his fingers so he can't actually write. And, the captain's just like, learn to write with her left hand. And then the guy like vomits all over himself. It's like
there's a lot of stuff like that.
There's a lot of vomiting.
This is one of the things where I just literally had no idea what was going to happen page
to page.
There's a lot
of graphic sex and violence
over the top.
The violence is really brutal.
Yeah. A lot of stabbing
and
slicing.
And it's supposed to be. Because, you know, you're supposed to see that some of these pirates are definitely like very unhinged.
Yeah.
And they're not just killing people. They're
brutal. Yeah. They're
just like cutting off people's parts and hanging them upside down, and
which is
them.
Very strange juxtaposed against what is like it still has like a light tone to it.
Yeah, it gets a little darker, kinda like the dialogue goes along.
And stuff. Yeah,
and just the and the art style is like, you know, it's kind of everything's
very
a little,
cartoony.
Yeah, like goofy.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm gonna spoil one scene, but there's a great scene very early on when he ends up on the pirate ship. And one of the crewmen has, like, abused a woman and been keeping her in, like, a trunk in his room and, like, doing terrible things to her. And the captain is, like, completely against that. So what he does is, he kills a whale, pulls all its guts out, and puts the guy inside, closes up the whale, and throws the whale overboard.
Yeah. Well, that I totally got that after a while, because there was actually the myth of the Jonah, like Jonah and the whale, that like if there was a cursed or, you know, someone on a ship did something unlucky, they became the Jonah. And so they were making him the Jonah in the whale and throwing him overboard to get rid of the luck, because women on ships was apparently very bad luck.
Well, during that scene, I was like, wait, what is going on right now? Yeah. Like, what are they doing to this guy? Oh, okay.
Yep.
And there's a lot of like cool, like kind of crazy things like that in this. Yeah, the only problem I have, it ends kind of weird.
Yeah, there are a few hints of it. There's a lot of like kind of religious overtones to it, and you know, it's a lot of talk about the Bible and, you know, good and evil and what, you know, these crazy people are doing. But then there are literally like 3 to 6 page segments where they're talking about biblical stuff or just like visions or weird stories, and the layout shifts from panels to just like, I don't know, like kind of amorphous, like J.H. Williams, you know, across the page, no real rhyme or reason to what panel you should be reading. Like they're turning sideways and just like crazy. I don't know.
Yeah, those pages kind of remind me of like some of Kevin Huizenga's pages.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit of that at the beginning too, when the teacher is teaching the kids about King Lear.
Oh, right. True. Yeah. And, but the end of the book, it just goes into that like on an insane level.
Yeah, it definitely has an ending, but there's definitely a lot of unresolved stuff.
I love this book, and I feel it had a terrible ending.
Yeah, well, I felt like, I was like, is there like another volume of this coming out?
No. I just feel he didn't know how to finish it.
Well, it definitely has an ending in it, and I like the very, like...
How to finish it well.
I like the last few pages
did
a lot.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah, I thought they were pretty
yeah, good. Yeah, I mean, just like, I got so invested in these insane characters that I wanted more resolution
with
all of them.
There's kind of like one of those almost like end of a 80s movie type thing where they're like, and then this happened to this guy.
True.
And this guy went on to become a writer, and this guy went on to die a terrible death. Almost everybody died a terrible death.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That part was kind of cool.
And the art's really cool. And
yeah, I mean, definitely the art is going to be a big draw for a lot of people on this book. Like, I think people who like stuff like Forming by Jesse Moynihan, or like the aforementioned, like Christoph Blaine, or even Trondheim and Svarr, and a lot of the... I don't know if Chris Wright's a European guy, but this definitely has a very European sensibility to it.
Right, yeah, we were leaving off like all the people in this are like, I don't know.
There's some interesting characters.
Like,
they're all complicated.
Doughy animal faces. I'm just talking about the art style.
Yeah,
is like,
it's
kind of animal looking. Like
it's kind of it's really hard to explain because they have these weird. Like some of it kind of reminds me of Tom Gall almost, but then like the way their bodies are shaped kind of reminds me of some Sammy Harkham stuff, or even it definitely seems like somewhat inspired by L.C. Seegar as well. So the art is interesting, but it's definitely not like anything I've seen before specifically.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to read like a really brutal pirate tale, it's a pretty good one. The characters are all very interesting.
But be ready for some like pretty off the wall stuff in it.
There's a lot of really brutal, really, really brutal things, especially near the end.
But all that being said, I think we would all recommend this book.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's so good.
Definitely.
Yeah.
All right, up next we've got another one of these new Marvel number one books.
Marvel Now!
Marvel Now, you guys! This is Deadpool number one. This is written by Brian Posehn and Jerry Duggan with art by Tony Moore.
I love that name.
And colors by Val Staples. And this is like a kind of a good jumping on point for people that haven't read Daredevil. I mean, I think that's kind of the point with all this Marvel Now stuff.
Yeah, or Deadpool.
Or wait,
you
what?
Said Daredevil.
God, everybody that came in today, I was like, check out Iron Man and Daredevil, the new number ones this week. And people are like, there's a new Daredevil. I'm like, no, there's definitely not a new Daredevil. But anyway, so this book is, I haven't been reading Deadpool.
Me neither.
And no. I that does not seem to matter at all. So basically, the main story of this book is that dead presidents are coming back to life because somebody's doing a magical ritual to bring them back to life. Yep. Because he thinks that the country's on the wrong track and these dead presidents can come back
and
turn it around.
It's a good political comic to read.
Yeah. And so basically, S.H.I.E.L.D. has to take care of it. It's like delegated to this like kind of low level S.H.I.E.L.D. operative,
right.
and they're just like make it work. So she
literally.
So she sees Deadpool basically take out like a giant monster and is like, look, I can just get this guy to take care of all this stuff because everybody knows Deadpool is crazy.
Yeah,
and
because the main thing is they don't want the Avengers to be involved in killing all these
presidents. Because they don't want like people seeing the Avengers.
The opening scene is Captain America decapitating a president. It's amazing.
Yeah, and actually the Daily Bugle headline after that happens is like the funniest thing. It's Cap snaps in scrap, decapitating America stars in Truman Show because he's
decapitating Truman.
Yeah,
so good.
But so basically they hired Daredevil because they're like, well,
Daredevil again.
God, they hired Deadpool. Because Deadpool's like insane anyway, and yeah. So then Deadpool fights the ghost of Franklin Roosevelt
in the wheelchair,
and then finds out that there's, you know, a lot more stuff to do after that, and that's pretty much what happens in the first issue.
There's a hilarious cameo by Jimmy Carter. That cracked me up. There's some really funny puns in this.
Yeah,
it's definitely so. That's the plot, but the kind of the selling points on this book are Brian Posehn is, if you don't know him, he's like a stand-up comedian. He's a really funny guy. He's like a metalhead stoner guy.
He's on the Sarah Silverman show.
Yeah, he's on the Sarah Silverman show.
Movie bits.
He's on the Drew Carey show.
Is he on the Drew Carey show?
He was.
I didn't know that. But what, The Price is Right?
Yeah.
But so his humor works really well with Deadpool, I think. I almost just said Daredevil again. And I feel like... I don't know, just the writing in this is really snappy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was laughing when I was reading it.
It moves at a brisk pace.
It does move at a brisk pace.
It's funny, and the action is
over the top.
All over the top.
And I think I will say that sometimes I feel like the dialogue's a little unnatural and stilted.
Yeah.
But just because he's kind of throwing everything at the wall and hoping that stuff sticks. And a lot of it does, and enough of it that it makes it a really fun read.
Yeah.
And I think Tony Moore was a really good choice for the artist for this book.
Of course.
Because he draws a good sort of combination of grotesque and humorous at the same time.
Right. Yeah.
Which is why, as much as I loved his art at the beginning of Walking Dead, it never really suited it as much as Adler's stuff because it is kind of it's got that goofy quality to
it. Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know. His art seems just perfect for this. And I don't know. I really had fun reading this book. I mean, it is dumb. But in a way, it achieves exactly what it intends to. I feel like, which is the important thing, you know.
I think it's like dumb fun. That's like the goal of it, not just be. I don't know.
I can't wait to see where this goes. There's a great ending, and I just want to see Deadpool kill more presidents.
Well, I think that's definitely what you're going to see at least over the next four issues or something like that. Yeah. So that's Deadpool number one. I mean.
Check it out.
It is exactly what we just said.
It's the best Deadpool comic of all time. I don't know.
There have been some really good Deadpool recently.
It's one of the best.
10 years.
Yeah, I like the one where I like the Secret Invasion crossover where Deadpool convinces the Skrulls to clone a bunch of Deadpools and then he just like uses it to like kill himself over and over again for fun.
You mean the last Deadpool number one series?
Basically. All right, so up next we've got a new series from Boom that cost $1.
Boom
shakalaka. This is Freelancers number one. So this is by a couple creative teams,
I will start out
talking about the main story, which is by Ian Brill. With art by Joshua Covey.
So basically, the freelancers in this story are a duo of women who've grew up as orphans at a kung fu orphanage where they learned to kick ass, and now they are kind of
freelancers.
Freelance bounty hunters for the rich. They're like fixers, for the rich people. You hire when you don't want anybody to know about it, so you gotta be super rich. And Yeah, this book was kind of brilliant and kind of idiotic at the same time.
It also seems like freelancers for some reason have to be like super buxom women who wear bikinis and stuff.
It doesn't hurt. I mean, they're running around like Venice Beach or wherever, but but yeah, it's kind of like Charlie's Angels. Like, there's weird.
Yeah,
like,
I got that kind of feeling, like Charlie's Angels or like
stuff crossed on top of it. Yeah.
21 Jump Street or something. Like
yeah, yeah, actually, yeah,
but less sort of above,
less classy.
Yeah, less sort of above ground than that.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
But it's cool. I mean, I like they have a kind of interesting backstory with their kung fu orphanage and these old masters that were teaching them. It's the art's not very good.
Well, so the art's interesting because the first couple pages by Joshua Covey are pretty well rendered.
Awesome.
It seems like
yeah.
he was like into it. He was spending a little time drawing it, and then as the issue goes on, it gets kind of less and less detailed and more kind of blobby and
a little more loose.
Yeah. Yeah, and by the end of his story, like the last couple pages are just like no backgrounds.
Yeah.
The characters seem a lot simpler, and there's just like not much going on art wise.
Yeah, it's almost like he shifted to a new artist, which might have happened.
No, I think it's still him. So
oh, there you go.
But so, I like the main story. I thought it was interesting. There's a cool little twist at the end. It's fun. It's kind of like something that's not around right now, I think, like kind of an action adventure-y.
Well, I was saying it reminds me of the books that Boom sort of used to put out. Like, there was a book called Cover Girl that this reminds me a lot of, which is kind of a book that probably nobody remembers. And then there were a couple other ones, too, that Boom kind of did when they were first starting out. But
and then the backup happens.
Yeah, so then there's the backup story. So the weird thing about this book is Freelancer was an idea that was created by Matt Gagnon and Felipe Smith. And Felipe Smith is... I would say a somewhat obscure creator who I love. He did a three-part series
Trilogy.
Called Pipo Chu. He's like an American Filipino artist who got a grant, moved to Japan, and produced a graphic novel.
Right.
And I think he did two. I think he also did one called NRBQ. So they came up with this idea, and then for some reason this main story is by Ian Brill and Joshua Covey, but the backup story in this is by Matt Gagnon. I don't know if I'm saying his name right, but Gagnon style and Felipe Smith, and it is so much better.
Well, do you think that like they just did this for fun as the short story because they created it and they're like, this is great, let's do a series off of it and hire these other dudes?
Here's what I think. I think that they created this. I mean, I have no reason to believe this, except it's just what I think. I think they created this as the pitch for the story, potentially.
Ah, gotcha.
And then kind of moved it into a different direction, because the backup story is about these two main characters when they're little kids, basically. Yeah. And it's just like a lot funnier. It's a lot. The writing's a lot better, and the art by Felipe Smith is
astounding,
amazing. I'm gonna buy this comic,
yeah,
just for the backup story, and he did one of the covers as well. But the I don't know. It's just like the back one's really funny,
yeah,
and the rest of it seems like it has a sense of humor, kind of.
It's funny. It's just not great.
Like, you don't laugh.
Yeah,
no.
But I feel like in the back one,
it's amusing as opposed to funny.
I feel like in the bat one, I was like laughing. Like, the teacher, basically one of the girls, I think her name is Valerie, is talking back to the teacher, and she's like, "Fine, just leave then." The teacher, and she's like, "Whatever, I know kung fu. Like, I'm out of here. I don't care." And
this is when they're still like very young kids.
Yeah,
they're like
8 years old or something like that.
And then they get assaulted by crackheads.
Yeah, they do get assaulted by crackheads, and then they fight them, and then they meet like a master, basically.
And they teach it.
Train
they
them.
Learn a good moral lesson.
Yeah. And it's fun.
Yeah.
And it makes freelancers worth a dollar.
Yeah, there is a awesome Felipe Smith, Matt Gagnon $1 story in here. Plus you get some other stuff for free. How's
Which
that?
Is okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, cool. So that's freelancers. I guess you know what we think about that. Okay, so up next we've got Iron Man number 1. This is another Marvel Now comic.
No.
Marvel, it's all happening right now, you guys.
Right now.
It's happening.
So this is by Kieran Gillen and Greg Land. Kieran Gillen, people will know from Phonogram, and he's been writing Uncanny X-Men. He wrote Thor for, or no, sorry, he writes Journey into Mystery. He's written a bunch of stuff. He's a good writer, and he's writing the upcoming Young Avengers thing, which I think is going to be pretty good, too.
Oh, yeah.
Greg Land is probably known for tracing people from the barbed wire movie poster
right.
and out of Abercrombie & Fitch catalogs and...
Right.
Doing She-Hulk covers? No, that was Greg Horn.
No,
yeah. Sojourn from CrossGen.
Doing Sojourn from CrossGen and doing like Phoenix war song.
Oh yeah,
he did a lot of Uncanny.
He did do a lot of Uncanny.
Yeah, there was a while when it was switching back and forth between Terry Dodson and Greg Land.
What a variety.
What a weird combination. But Iron Man number one.
All right, so this is kind of a really accessible Iron Man comic, kind of made for people coming into Iron Man off the movies a little bit.
Yeah,
and it feels a little influenced by the upcoming Iron Man 3 because it goes back to the extremist stuff that's happened before. Well, you know, you get your kind of introduction to Tony Stark and who he is and what he's about and where he's going with his company. And then something, you know, from his past comes and he has to clean up the mess. That's what's pretty much all the first issue is about.
Yeah, it's very intro-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
it's a little light. I liked it. I liked the dialogue. But it felt a little bit like it was something I kind of read before. Like, it didn't seem like a completely fresh take on Iron Man.
Well, it does have a feel like it's like almost like a lesser version of Matt Fraction's Invincible Iron Man.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Also, it's weird because it is accessible in one sense, but then from the other side, like, if you haven't been reading Iron Man, like, you don't know what a lot of the stuff they're talking about is, I would assume. Like, they don't really explain what extremist armor is, so I think a lot of people would just not know.
They explain it enough. Well, he's like, I created this thing that may turn people into living weapons, and this is what they turn into because I'm fighting them now or whatever.
That's true.
And then kind of all this stuff like that Fraction set up with like him selling Stark Tech and like starting like a green company that makes like electric cars and stuff like that. All that stuff is just like kind of just barfed out at the beginning by characters and like a weird dialogue. But I don't know. I say stuff like that, but I still enjoyed it. The dialogue especially was kind of felt like Tony Stark-ish.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
And I don't know if Kieran Gillen is tracing
Greg Land.
What did I say?
Kieran Gillen.
If Greg Land is tracing any like Iron Man movie stills or something, but he draws a pretty good Iron Man in this.
He's definitely.
Does he? It looks like Downey Jr. is putting on a little weight.
Definitely. There's a girl that there's like the first time this girl shows up on like the second page, and it is the same thing that Greg Land has traced like 5,000 times.
Yeah, it's the Greg Land girl.
Yeah, it's the Greg Land girl. Usually she's like crouching with high heels on.
But there was at least a couple like chuckles in this, and there was one really hilarious line in it where he's, I don't know.
You should leave that to somebody.
Yeah,
that
he's trying to get information out of somebody and something funny happens.
And then it gets kind of classic in a sense, like AIM shows up, which I think is kind of fun. I'm still not a fan of Greg Land's art. I think it's better than it's been. And if he's going to draw anything, I think Iron Man's good because Iron Man doesn't, like, he can look kind of stiff, like, because
he's
made out of metal.
Yeah.
But I feel like everything else also looks really stiff as well. At least some of his characters now seem to make facial expressions from time to time, which is nice. But he's still just like, his art is not dynamic enough for me. And his action scenes in particular look very staged.
Yeah, but the writing's good enough where it explains some of the stuff pretty well. Like, it's interesting, they talk a lot about, you get a good sense of Iron Man, Tony Stark, having like, being ready for the future. Like, everything about it is everything he talks about is about the future, and they kind of do a good way of showing that, or like how he's like ready. He was always ready for extremists to show up again, so he's like got countermeasures that he easily takes them out. And whereas, like, you know, the extremist storyline, he took him like 6 issues to fight whatever one guy.
Yeah. Even with all that, though, it just feels like for a Marvel Now book, this didn't do enough new stuff for me. This, like Kevin said, is just kind of rehashing too much old. It didn't feel as new as I wanted.
Yeah, I think
for me, this was pretty disappointing.
I think you're going to end up finding that with a lot of the Marvel Now stuff that's going to be coming out. It definitely all seems to be, I think people are thinking this is like some sort of
reboot,
relaunch.
Yeah,
but it's all spinning out of previous storylines. I mean, this one is very much spinning out of the stuff that happened in Extremis and Invincible Iron Man.
It's still pretty accessible, I feel. Like, you get a good rundown of everything in this pretty quick.
Sure, yeah, you're almost better off having not read any of that stuff because then it doesn't feel so much like a retread. It feels like something new.
Yeah.
But I can definitely see where Jared's coming from. I'll keep up with this book at least for a little while.
Yeah, of course.
I don't know
I love Kieran Gillen.
I'll read the second one, but after that, if it's not much better, I'm like,
I'm mostly excited for Kieran Gillen's Young Avengers book.
Though. Oh, that's going to be amazing.
That looks so awesome. All right, up next we've got another Valiant book. We've reviewed quite a few of these at this point, but this one is Shadow Man. It's about The Shadow Man. It's this is written by Justin Jordan, who wrote Strange Talent, Luther Strode, and Team 7. And the art, and this is by Patrick Zurcher, who drew Terror Incorporated, the most popular comic in the history of mankind.
So good.
And Mystery Men.
And Mystery Men, yeah. But Terror Incorporated, the one that he drew, is like the best thing. Read that if you can find it.
Oh, yeah. So good.
It's out of print, but it's probably really cheap because nobody cares. Yeah, so Shadow Man.
Yeah, so here's one that does have the advantage that I believe none of us read the original one, so it's long enough ago that this seems fresh, and we have no idea if it's a complete retread of the story or a whole new take on it.
I did learn in here that it's available on Comixology, though, if you want to read it, along with the...
Don't do it. It's a trick.
25,000 other selections.
I've heard that the original one was pretty good. But anyway, from what this one is, this is another reimagining or restart of the old Valiant stuff from back in the 90s.
Is it a sequel?
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
Ooh. Well, that's a good point. It could be a sequel. Anyway,
it's not a very good point because he's just saying that.
I'm just going by what happens in the beginning.
That's true. But yeah, so this is set in New Orleans, and the opening scene is that there is a couple, and they either both have some mystic powers, or at least he does, as he is the Shadow Man and goes off to fight a whole mess of the dead or demons or, you know, supernatural awfulness. And
that's what I was saying. Is he the original Shadow Man from like the old Valiant comics?
That's what I didn't realize. Maybe he is. But anyway, so he goes up against fighting some super, you know, sorcerer, necromancer dude, and then it vanishes and it jumps to the future.
Is this guy's last name pronounced Boniface?
Boniface.
It might be
name
Boniface.
Josiah Boniface.
Well, somebody Boniface. Said something about that too.
Dude.
Yeah. Like, is that your name?
Anyway, sorry.
No, it's cool. But yeah, so basically, they have a son who has grown up not knowing what happened to his parents, who have both vanished, and yet he wears a strange medallion that was given to him by his mother. And he finally gets bitter about it because he finds out that his parents were crazy people who had all kinds of like records.
Or supposedly they were, yeah, they were like,
you know, they're like murderers and like all these assault charges and stuff, like you would do if you were some sort of supernatural warriors or whatever. And so he takes off the medallion, which has then apparently been protecting him his entire life. So good thing he never took that off before. And more supernatural stuff happens. A bad guy is back on the scene.
Some demons
possessing people. Yeah. And I thought this was pretty awesome.
And then he becomes Shadow Man.
What? That's the cliffhanger ending.
It's not too much of a spoiler.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he becomes
the new Shadow Man.
Yeah. And that's pretty much everything that happens in this entire book.
Yeah. The art is so good.
The art is, I will say, I was not a fan of this book, but the art in this book I thought was spectacular. Patrick Zurcher is a guy I've always been a fan of. He has a very, I'd say like a, I don't even know how I would describe his style. Like somewhere between like Jay Lee and Doug Brathwaite or something like that. Like some weird place in between there that doesn't make any sense. But his stuff's really detailed, but then there's always like a really good sense of motion and stuff as well. And he's really good at drawing the grotesque, which definitely helps out.
There's a lot of gross demons in this.
Yeah, it definitely helps out in this. The only thing with this book is it just... I don't know if it's that combo of like New Orleans and demons, or especially like cops and demons,
right?
Where I just get that like whiff of like Top Cow that like stink over top of the book, and I just my eyes kind of glaze over a little bit. Like the story in this seems very run of the mill.
There's a dwarf in it, man.
There is a dwarf in it. It's just like Jackass, but yeah, I don't know. It was okay. I wasn't like. I'm definitely don't finish it, and I'm excited to read the next issue.
I thought it was cool.
Yeah, yeah. I know Nick and Jared both liked it a lot, so don't listen to what I say.
Not the best comic I read involving a dwarf this week. I get a mini review of X Factor. It involved Pip the Troll. It was all about Pip the Troll, and he was pretending to be Peter Dinklage.
Mini review!
There's a really funny line. It's like, I thought your name was Pip. He's like, yeah, it's like Peter Dinklage, but I go Pip for short sometimes.
That's awesome.
And he has this elaborate plot where he saves a woman from being robbed so he can take her home and sleep with her. And that's what the entire issue is about.
That's good. That's X Factor, though. Yeah, not Shadow Man.
No. People are very confused.
Shadow Man. Pretty good.
Did we say everything there is to say about Shadow
Man?
Yep, I think so. It's Shadow Man.
It's interesting.
Yeah. Now I'm kind of curious what the old Shadow Man is about. I bet it's about those parents.
I bet it's great.
you make that bet, buddy. All right. So up next, we've got Storm Dogs. This is a new Image book, which is always, those are always exciting words to say.
Yeah.
And this is by David Hine, who he's written all kinds of weird stuff.
Sayak. Now what do you do?
He did Strange Embrace.
Yep.
That was pretty good.
He did X-Men the 198.
Yep. He did
Son of M.
Yeah. What was the great
what was the cop one?
Bulletproof Coffin.
Yeah, District M, is that
District,
what it was
District
called?
X.
District X.
Yep.
Yep.
That was a great comic, actually.
And I think he wrote some Batman stuff at one point. He's written he's like a one dude that's just like all over the place.
Right.
But sometimes he writes really good stuff.
Yep.
And this seems to be one of those things. And the art in this is by Doug Brathwaite. I'm going to say that that way.
Brathwaite?
Sure. The spelling will be up on the webpage.
He's drawn like Captain America a lot, and he did... I don't know. He's done all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
I mostly remember him from Captain America. But, yeah, so this is kind of a Avatar-ish story, not The Last Airbender, but the James Cameron one, where there's kind of a mining operation going on this planet, but they've been there for a long time, and they've kind of, there's some colonies developed on the planet, and there's been a rash of murders, and these this crew of kind of investigators has been sent to find out why all these people are dying. And it's pretty interesting. It quickly gets into kind of a little bit about the society there, and there's two different races that kind of...
Intelligent races
that are part of the planet. And there's interesting little touches here and there about the environment and what like they have a acid rainstorms.
Yeah, not like environmentalism stuff.
But no, red lightning, and
it's not that much like Avatar.
And the ecosystem is pretty interesting. Well, it's a little bit like Avatar. There's like kind of dinosaur-y creatures.
Oh no, I meant it's not like basically like a Captain Planet episode like Avatar
right,
is.
Right.
But so like these main characters in this are kind of like, I don't, what would you call them? Like the local police basically can't handle what's going on. So these guys are almost like the FBI, like
special forces.
And they are the Storm Dogs.
Yeah, and they're called that because of some weird thing.
Even though they don't know why they're called the Storm Dogs.
Yeah. Well, somebody just get named.
Yeah, they just get named that later in the issue. That's a very weird.
But wasn't there like
scene.
A reference to being like, oh, I need to be called a Storm Dog? Or like, how would you know you'd be called that till you get to this planet? It was weird.
I don't think they call themselves the Storm Dogs.
Calls them Storm Dogs.
No, but later on,
because they
want
to go out in the storm.
I understand that, but later on, there's someone else who refers to it, and they're like,
I don't know.
Everybody, the news of the Storm Dogs travels fast.
Right.
Amarnia.
Oh no, I think it was. They have like bios of some of the people in the back.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, that has nothing to do with it. Anyway, so there's a pretty cool setup where they kind of meet a race of people that seem very Avatar-esque.
They're kind
of like tribal people. They're red people, not blue. And they have weird creatures, like horse-like creatures that they ride.
They're called the Na'vi.
They're the Elohi. But there's also another race, which we haven't seen yet, which seems like they could be completely crazier. But yeah, it's definitely got a lot of Avatar-type things going on, but... Overall, it's a really good kind of murder mystery.
Yeah, I like it. Does have those elements, but I would say the feel of it is completely different than something like Avatar.
No, it's definitely more.
It's less like heavy-handed. It kind of drops
more westernish.
Yeah, it kind of drops you in. It is very similar to a western where like they're almost like these.
The marshals come into town.
Yeah, to help out and
local problems that they're covering up what's really going on.
Yeah, and like the aliens are kind of like the tribes are kind of like Native Americans.
And it's also it's very atmospheric. Like this sort of acid rainstorm comes and kind of, you know, people can't leave. It gives it almost like the thing, Dogs of Mars kind of feel to it as well.
Right.
And it was cool. It kind of surprised me. I didn't know what to expect from it. And
yeah, the one thing about it, this is like hard science fiction. It's not even like Planetoid or some of the other ones where just like things happen and they're not really explained. Like there's actually thought into this and it could be a reasonable sci-fi setting.
There's some great world building and interesting technology stuff. And how the one of the interesting things where they talk about how this planet is like a little more primitive, so we have to use like lesser technology so we don't freak them out.
Right. And Doug Brathwaite's art is actually like really good in this. He's good at drawing aliens as well as sort of these environments and
the technology stuff too.
I think the coloring is a little bad. I don't like it much.
It's a little weird. It's a little like
it's a little photoshoppy,
faded, watercolory.
Yeah, it doesn't work quite as well as I think it could. But that's a small thing in the scheme of things. Yeah, it's an interesting book.
And some good character build up.
Yeah, there's like already
distinct stuff about him.
With this whole crew of characters, yeah, you already sort of get a feel for them. And like there's one guy who's basically like breaking up with his boyfriend before he goes out on this trip. And so you kind of get a look into his life and some of the other characters. And
yeah.
And then there's all this sort of other social stuff going on that's hinted at, and sort of these cultural sort of rifts between different parts of the world and stuff. It's cool.
Yeah, especially for how short it was. Yeah, I mean, like, the time on that.
Much like in Avatar, I like kind of want to know more about this world. As soon as you start seeing, the more you see, the more interesting the world becomes. And it's like,
I didn't want to know about Avatar.
One thing that Avatar did, like, despite all the story stuff, like it did like one of the best jobs of building like a real world. You know, like something that could actually like
because the whole point of that movie is just like excuses to introduce people to things in the world. Right. I mean, it's just Dances with Wolves, basically. But I thought Storm Dogs was a good book and the biggest surprise of the week for me. All right, so we got one more thing we're going to talk about this week. We've got Ben Hackey coming in this weekend, so we thought we would talk about the Zeta the Space Girl books, which we never actually got around to doing.
Reviewing, yeah.
Yeah, so
although they did the first one, Zeta the Space Girl did make it onto our best of 2011 kids book top 10 list. Break that down into like 8 separate sections.
I've started thinking about that. We're gonna like pretty soon we're gonna have to start.
Oh, I've been thinking about it. It's gonna be crazy.
It's gonna be a test.
So much stuff.
I feel like in December we're all gonna be playing catch up, trying to read a bunch of stuff.
Yeah,
you know, because there was stuff we left off last year that I kind of am like, oh yeah, we didn't actually read
amazing.
Like Love and Rockets,
true
5 and stuff like that. But yeah, anyway, that's a whole other thing. Be prepared for those 3 hours at the beginning of January.
So Jared had already read Zeta the Space Girl, and he's been ranting and raving about it, but I hadn't read it. I remember I started reading it, but we didn't have enough time to finish it for the show when it came out, and I was just like, oh, well, I guess we'll skip it right now. We'll do it later, and we never got around to it. And since the second book is coming out and Ben's coming here, Jared's like, let's read them. And
crazy.
I decided that Zeta is awesome. All right, so the first book, Zeta the Space Girl, starts off with Zeta and her friend frolicking in a field, and a meteor crashes, and there's a device on it. It's a big button. They push it, and her friend gets kidnapped and taken to another dimension or another planet. It's like a teleporter, and then she follows him and spends the entire book trying to save him or find him, really.
Yeah, it's almost like Amulet a little bit in that way.
Yeah, it's got kind of that Amulet style, like Bone, maybe like a solid book that could be a continued series. But something that actually reminded me a lot, which is really weird, is like old Jim Henson stuff. It reminded me a lot of Labyrinth little bit.
You definitely get that in that. It's like that sort of that basic structure of like, you know, you're moving towards this goal and you meet like a lot of little weird characters, but then
there's a lot of crazy creatures.
Like Dark Crystal like Miyazaki movies or something. There's a lot of like, and like just because you run into a bunch of aliens, this is not like a single alien planet. This is like goes to a place where there are a bunch of different species and robots, and so very, very inventive.
Or like
stuff.
Almost like Never Ending Story or something, where it's like, okay, now here's this guy who's like this kind of evil robot who's trapped in the ground but is willing to help Zeta if she frees him. And then there's like this other robot
who ends up
being really important to the story. Yeah, right. There's like a giant mouse that she rides on. She like basically her Falcor.
Yeah. It's like Labyrinth in the way that like she's constantly meeting these new characters and they join her and they slowly form a big party.
And they all have their own stories as well.
Yeah.
And their own powers that will be useful later.
Their own arcs and stuff.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of interesting things that one of the big characters she meets is this guy named Piper, who's kind of like the Pied Piper. He has a flute that lets him kind of control people. And he's an inventor, and he's the one that kind of sets her on the path to finding her friend. And he has like a book that like has all the alien races in it, so it's kind of interesting. Like, there's a bunch of pages of just
that's like a
guidebook to aliens.
Yeah, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy type stuff.
Yeah, and you know, it's a great adventure story. It's just really fun and not dumbed down. You know, a lot like Bone and Amulet. Like, there's real stakes. People get hurt, and yeah, I mean. It takes an interesting twist, and then it feels like it was kind of like he definitely intended to do more, but this one, the first book, is structured in a way where like if there wasn't more, it would be fine,
right?
Whereas the second book kind of gets more epic.
Yeah, and definitely ends on a cliffhanger. So it really picks up literally, like, I don't know, very shortly after the end of the first one, where their adventure is continuing, and it doesn't follow the same thing because now they're all together, but it's more like, how does Zita find her way home? And
there's a lot of things about her fame now that she's saved.
Yeah, the world that she's kind of become this famous, you know, adventurer heroine. But it also, like, kind of starts building up the backstory, a lot of the supporting cast, and, like, tying people in, and, like, things that have been hinted at in the first one are spelled out more, like, oh, why is Mouse hanging out with these humans, and, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely building this kind of bigger story where, like, it's self-contained in a lot of ways, but then there's also, like, bigger stuff that's going on that is set up for more books, which it seems like in the first one you probably wasn't sure how well it was going to do, so you didn't really set up a lot of that. So it's like in some ways the first one feels a little simple. It's good, it's really good, but it doesn't have like too much complexity to it.
Yeah.
Whereas the second one, there's a lot of elements to the world introduced, and yeah, it's a lot more touching too. There's some pretty crazy stuff that happens in it.
Yeah. I think just because he's obviously, you know, ends on a cliffhanger, there's going to be another one. He could build these bigger themes. He doesn't have to pay off immediately.
And there's a lot more interesting ideas in this. And the aliens in this are pretty insane.
Yeah.
They're giant, like, monstrous hearts.
Yeah.
Heart-shaped creatures.
The space hearts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The art's great, I will say.
I think my one problem with his art is, like, it's very inventive. And this, I think, is even where I see more Miyazaki influence and just kind of the character design and the creatures and stuff.
Definitely.
A lot of this feels like, for the amount of pages he had, he wanted to stretch out a little bit longer. So, like, there'll be parts where just it seems like if he'd had, like, two more panels on a page, he could have, like, shown something a little bit better or just, like, you know, had a little payoff on
I don't know,
a
though.
Gag
I,
or something,
I,
you know?
I feel like sort of that economy of storytelling though makes the whole thing feel very like it's all fast paced and like it just works really well. Like nobody is ever saying things they don't need to say.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true. Maybe it's less of a drawback and more than just like that such a strong animation feel to this. Like,
yeah.
Like in the first one, as soon as she appears on the planet, she's just like surrounded by all these aliens at this market and is kind of freaking out. And there's a giant snail that kind of basically comes up to her and she doesn't know what to do. And it just runs her over like a steamroller and she just gets slimed onto the ground. And it, you know, it just shows it over four panels, but like, you know, just as an animated, you know, 30-second sequence, you can totally see her like panicking and like slowly getting run over. So I think that's it that he can,
I think
on these pages can really show like, you know, what a longer animated sequence would be and yet do it in only four panels.
Yeah, which I think, like, but if you were to actually watch that on the screen, it would probably take you about as much time as it takes to look at those three panels and move on.
That's true. Yeah.
Like, if you make that long, it kind of, you have to make much. Everything else longer, too.
Right, yeah, true. Yeah.
But, yeah, and actually, you're talking about animation. It for some reason, when I was reading this, it reminded me a lot of The Brave Little Toaster. I don't know if you guys remember that movie, but like the whole feel of it and all the characters and stuff and how they all have their kind of very sort of magnified flaws and things. For some reason, it made me think of that.
There's a funny like example of that is like there's a really funny visual scene where there's like two people arguing about who gets to pilot the spaceship.
Oh yeah.
And the guy's like, well, you have to have good eyesight to pilot this this spaceship, and he's got like a million eyes on his head. And the other guy's like, well, you need to have good
like manual control,
good control of steering and all the buttons and stuff, and he's got like tons of arms and stuff. You know, it's kind of funny, like
very
stuff like that,
very inventive on the both monster and like alien design and stuff.
But overall great series. I definitely recommend it to people who eat like Bone Amulet, and this one's one that's specifically good for girls. There's like strong female characters in this, not just Zita, but like there's another character that gets
in the second one.
And they're not, you know, they're not girls. Like they're, you know, they're girls, but they're not like super girly. You know what I mean? Like
they're not like helpless princesses.
They're not simplified. Yeah. They're just like regular. You know.
Yeah, because like you know, Zita has some low moments, and there's a lot of emotional stress and like problems. You know, she goes through a lot to try and save her friend, but
she feels like a real girl, which probably comes from the fact that
she makes some bad choices, and
Ben's got like
three daughters,
five girls, or
three,
four girls, or something.
Yeah.
So he just works on graphic novels to be alone.
He has four daughters.
Four?
Four daughters.
Good lord.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, we all think these books are pretty good. And we're going to have Ben here. I think we're going to try to talk to him for the next podcast. So
hopefully.
So look out for that.
Unfortunately, I won't.
Yeah, Nick will be at the other store. Yeah,
I'll teach him.
We can Skype in.
Should teleconference.
You could do it.
We're not going to Skype Nick in.
No.
But yeah, I think that's it for this week. And we'll see you guys next time.
See ya.
All right.